All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KNX News 97.1 FM,
this is Countdown 2024.
Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
Well, have you been counting? 35 days to go before Donald Trump is sworn back into the office of the presidency. Welcome to Countdown 2024. On today's show, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. would bring all kinds of baggage with him to Health and Human Services if he is confirmed as the department's next secretary. But the biggest worry with Kennedy is his history of anti-vaccine advocacy. So we will hear from an FDA advisor who is hoping that Kennedy doesn't come anywhere close to vaccine policy. And also on today's show, can the Trump administration derail California's controversial high-speed rail project for good? But first, this.
President-elect Donald Trump this morning gave a freewheeling news conference from his Mar-a-Lago golf resort in Florida, where he touched on everything from the polio vaccine to defamation lawsuits after ABC News made a hotly debated decision to settle a defamation suit against Trump with a $15 million payment. Trump promised to go after more news organizations that have been critical of him. And while Trump's Health and Human Services Director nominee, RFK Jr., has long tied vaccines to autism, Trump said today that he was a big believer in the polio vaccine. But when it comes to vaccine mandates at schools and workplaces, the president-elect said he is opposed.
There were some more headlines from Trump's news conference today. He said that he would look at a possible pardon for New York City's Mayor Eric Adams, who is currently facing federal corruption charges, claiming that Adams was, and we're quoting, treated very unfairly. Trump also says he's going to stay away from his Bedminster golf resort in New Jersey, with growing reports of drone activities in the area. And Trump also says he believes the federal government is hiding something about all of those drone sightings. The president-elect says he wants to fire also any federal employees not physically coming into offices for work.
And here we go again. The federal government is in danger of shutting down by Friday night if Congress can't pass spending legislation. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has been struggling to pass a continuing resolution to keep funding for the government at current levels, foreshadowing the difficulties Johnson is likely to have over the next 2 years as he navigates a paper-thin Republican House majority. This is a particularly worrying omen for Johnson, who not only has to fund the government this week, but he has to win a House Speaker race on January 3rd.
Concerns over the anti-vax attitudes and policies that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. would bring with him to federal health and science agencies have reached the point where the president-elect of the United States actually had to reaffirm his support for the polio vaccine. Dr. Paul Offit is an infectious disease pediatrician and professor of vaccinology at the University of Pennsylvania. He directs the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and he's also a member of the FDA's Vaccine Advisory Committee. Dr. Offit, thanks for being with us. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
Let me start off by seeing if we can separate the political rhetoric from the actual reality in the in this real world of ours. Can a President Trump, can a Robert F. Kennedy Jr., no matter what position he may end up in, can they actually ban any available vaccines that have already been approved?
I think what they could say, what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. could say to the head of the FDA, I don't think this vaccine has been studied well enough. I don't think there's been the right kind of placebo-controlled trials. And so I want to take them off the market until those trials are done. Or I don't think there's been an adequate or accurate representation of, say, aluminum as aluminum adjuvants in vaccines. And I think we should put a pause on those vaccines until we see those data presented. So sure, I think there could be major disruption of the vaccine infrastructure.
President-elect Trump just today said Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will be far less radical than people think. What do you think?
I think we should trust Robert F. Kennedy Jr. for what he said over the last 20 years. I mean, just last year, he said he thinks no vaccine is of benefit. He thinks that the polio vaccine killed, in his words, many, many, many more people than it saved. He thinks that the COVID vaccine is the most dangerous vaccine ever invented. Why do we think that it all goes away if he becomes Secretary of Health and Human Services?
Let's take it from a different angle for a minute, Doctor, and let's look at the possibility that perhaps Kennedy has something, you know, there. Is there anything wrong with questioning even conventional medical wisdom? I mean, you know, doctors have been proven wrong over the years. Theories have changed rather dramatically. I'm thinking things like, you know, years ago, if you had a heart attack, they told you to stay in bed for like a half a year. Now they want you to get up and exercise and do all kinds of things. So things do change. So is it necessarily a bad thing to take another look at things that we think we know, but maybe we don't?
Well, you're certainly right that we learn as we go. We learn new things as time goes on. And so for example, a parent could say, you know, my child was fine. They got this vaccine and now they're not fine. Could the vaccine have done it? And so that happened really in the late 90s, early 2000s with the measles, mumps, rubella, or MMR vaccine in autism. Could that vaccine have contributed to autism? And so since then, there have been about 18 studies done in seven countries on three continents involving thousands of children, tens of thousands of children, looking at children who got that vaccine or didn't get the vaccine to see whether the incidence of autism was greater in the vaccinated group. And in study after study, it wasn't. So asked and answered. I think you have to give credit to the public health and academic community for responding. But that's not where our Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is. He basically looks at those data and says, they're still lying to us. So he's not a vaccine skeptic. He's a vaccine cynic. He doesn't believe the data because they don't conform to a fixed hypothesis that he already has.
We are speaking with Dr. Paul Offit, an infectious disease pediatrician and professor of vaccinology at the University of Pennsylvania, also a member of the FDI's Vaccine Advisory Committee. Let's touch a little bit on COVID because there's still a lot of doubts, conspiracy theories, hesitations to take new doses of the available COVID vaccines, and kind of the entire COVID vaccine debate really helped stoke those old fears about childhood vaccines. Can you say with confidence that the COVID vaccines have been pretty safe and effective overall?
Yes. I mean, I think that COVID vaccines probably saved about 3 million American lives. They're not absolutely safe. So, for example, the mRNA vaccines were found to be a rare cause of myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart muscle. Now, it seems that that's generally transient and self-resolving. But you give credit, again, to the vaccine community, if you will, that within just months of that vaccine coming out, you could see that issue of myocarditis occurred in about 1 in 50,000 people. You know, so that's a rare adverse event that was picked up very quickly. But sure, the vaccine clearly saved lives. I mean, in 2021, you were 12 times more likely to be hospitalized and die if you weren't vaccinated than if you were. In 2022, you were 6 times more likely to be hospitalized and died. Yes, if you were vaccinated, unvaccinated than if you were vaccinated. So yes, the vaccine has saved our lives. It couldn't be clearer.
Let's take a look at the broader picture and not focus on any one particular vaccine. Do you think that in terms of the public's perception, the public's trust in the healthcare system, do you think it has already been significantly damaged over the past few years, even before the inauguration of Donald Trump again into the White House? And if so, what repairs that damage?
Yes, I do. I think it was a combination of things. I think in 2020, before we had vaccines or antivirals or monoclonals, all we had was limit human-to-human contact. So we shuttered schools, we closed businesses, we restricted travel, we isolated, quarantined, masked. It's all we had. And I think that was seen by some as massive government overreach, as an intrusion. Similarly, in 2021, once we had vaccines, you couldn't go to your favorite bar or restaurant or sporting event or place of worship unless you showed your vaccine card. And I think that was also seen as massive overreach in this country. And you see now this so-called medical freedom movement of, you know, let me do what I want to do. But, you know, this is a contagious disease. Is it your right to catch and transmit a potentially fatal infection? I think no. I think you owe it to the people standing next to you on the elevator or in the bus who may not, you know, be able to get a vaccine because they're getting cancer chemotherapy or they're getting immune suppressive therapy for their rheumatologic or autoimmune diseases. I mean, we are part of society, and I think you owe it to society to be protected and to protect those around you.
It is a complicated debate, and I'm sure we will discuss it a lot more in the weeks and months ahead. Till then, Dr. Paul Offit, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, a California congressman is calling on Elon Musk and President-elect Donald Trump to blow up the state's high-speed rail project once and for all. We will talk to him next.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM. This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the show. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Margaret Carrero. While California voters did move a little to the right in November's election, this is still a solidly Democratic state operating with progressive priorities. But as Governor Gavin Newsom and lawmakers in Sacramento are seeking to Trump-proof, as the governor has said, the state over the next 4 years, there's one California program that finds itself uniquely vulnerable to President-elect Trump's power and influence in Washington, D.C., and that would be the state's long-suffering high-speed rail project.
California Republicans are hoping to get an assist from Elon Musk and the new government efficiency office that is looking to make aggressive spending cuts. High-speed rail could be a casualty of that effort. Congressman Kevin Kiley is a Republican representing the 3rd District that includes Sacramento suburbs and Sierra Nevada communities. Congressman, thanks for being with us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
So are you concerned, first of all, how do you feel about the high-speed project? And if you think you're in favor of it, are you concerned that it may become, as we said, a potential casualty?
Well, no, I'm not in favor of it. Quite the contrary. I've introduced legislation to eliminate all funding for the high-speed rail project so that our share of the federal dollars can go towards the real transportation needs that we have right now, improving the quality of our roads, alleviating traffic, funding local transit systems, investing in future technologies, as opposed to just continuing to throw money at a project that is still $100 billion short of its target, that has been going on for well over 15 years and hasn't served a single passenger, and that the New York Times estimates isn't even going to be completed this century. So this is exactly the time to stop throwing good money after bad, to end this project once and for all, and to give Californians the sort of return on their tax dollars that they deserve.
Okay, so obviously if Trump decides to scuttle it, we would be probably jumping for joy. But what do you tell taxpayers about all the money that's been spent thus far?
Well, the money that's been spent so far, as vast of a sum as it is actually quite small compared to the amount that they ultimately want to spend. The head of, the Rail Authority recently testified that there's still a $100 billion funding shortfall. So there's no reason that we should continue to dedicate billions of dollars every year towards a project that probably isn't going to ever be built, and that even if it is built, is going to be yesterday's technology. When we have among the worst roads in the country, we have terrible traffic in many parts of this state, and so those dollars could be a lot better spent actually improving the quality of lives of commuters and all Californians.
I wonder, Congressman, what you would say, or if you've even spoken to the Republican mayor of the city of Fresno, Jerry Dyer, who has come out saying he's a strong proponent of the high-speed rail project, telling Cal Matters that he describes his position as a pro-business, views high-speed rail as a way to dramatically increase their revenues through a better economy. There's people in the Valley who feel really optimistic about it and talking about seeing progress there. What do you say to them?
Well, sure. I mean, I think a lot of Americans go overseas and they ride high-speed trains, in other parts of the world, and they say it'd be great to have that here. In fact, China just recently announced that it's planning a high-speed train that's going to be completed by the end of the decade that will go up to 1,000 kilometers per hour. That's 3 times faster than the California train, is supposed to go if it's ever even completed. So I agree very much with the sentiment that it'd be great to have this option, which makes it all the more unacceptable that the political incompetence of our state leaders has made the project no longer viable.
Right. Let's move off of the rails into a bigger topic, which is there is great animosity, as you know, between Donald Trump and Governor Newsom, and that is bound to have an impact on how the White House treats the state of California. And that means at the end of the day, Congressman, your constituents. What do you think can be done about that?
Well, I think anything that we can do to push back against Gavin Newsom's truly devastating policies will be very positive. You know, California leads the nation in poverty. California has the highest taxes in the country. We have among the biggest achievement gaps in our schools. We have the most homeless. We have crime, retail crime that's worse here than anywhere else in the country. And that is all made worse by the failed policies of Gavin Newsom in California. And so I very much look forward to using the levers that we have at our disposal to promote public safety in California, to lower the cost of housing, to lower the cost of energy, to lower the overall cost of living, to try to alleviate poverty, to try to create job growth. California right now is second to last in the country when it comes to unemployment. And I think that we got off to a great start with that, by the way, by passing Prop 36 on the ballot this November. Gavin Newsom fought against that tooth and nail. He even tried to remove it from the ballot. But at the end of the day, Californians thought differently. 68% passed it. An overwhelming majority passed in each and every one of California's 58 counties, including San Francisco. So what you have right now is a governor who could not be more out of step with what Californians are looking for. And so I'm looking forward to working across party lines with the new president, with the new Congress, to make sure that we're delivering for Californians. And yes, that will mean taking on Governor Newsom when necessary.
We are speaking with Republican Congressman Kevin Kiley of Northern California. We'll finish up our conversation with him next.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the Monday edition of Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
Northern California Republican Congressman Kevin Kiley remains with us to finish off today's program. Your thoughts, Congressman, about Kamala Harris and this floating idea of her running for governor?
Well, I don't know if that's what I'd recommend to her. I mean, if she were to run, I think that it really could make it a competitive race statewide in 2026. And I think the sort of policies that she and Gavin Newsom have been promoting, which have raised the cost of living, which have undermined public safety. Harris refused to take a position on Prop 36, for example. That's just not where Californians are at right now. I think that what you saw in the 2024 race on all across the ballot in California was the emergence of a coalition for common sense that is looking to get our state back on the right track. And the sort of Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom style of governance is what has got us on the wrong track. So if she does decide to run, then I think it'll make for a very interesting race.
Right. As you know, it's been a while since the state has elected a Republican as governor. Where is the evidence that you could cite that you think would lead potentially to Californians again voting for a Republican as a governor?
Well, and as we were just talking about in the 2024 election, the one that we literally just had last month, you had voters come together almost 70% past Prop 36, which says we're going to make crime illegal again in California. We're going to restore common sense public safety policies. And remember, Gavin Newsom fought against that every single step of the way. The supermajority fought against it. Kamala Harris refused to support it. So that shows a very clear gap between where the people of California are and where our state's sort of ruling establishment is. And I think it goes beyond just Democrat versus Republican, because yes, and there's still a supermajority in the legislature, and none of that's going to change overnight. Although I think things are now moving in the right direction towards more balance, but I think that this coalition for common sense that's emerging in California is going to be willing to say, look, what we need a little more balance in our state. We need a little more common sense in our state. And if you can get leaders who actually focus on the core quality of life issues that we have and effective governance, then I think that voters will be willing to make different decisions perhaps than have been made in recent elections.
Just a quick question for you, because we're running out of time here, Congressman. Do you have any concerns when President-elect Trump was still on the campaign trail? He had made some threats of withholding wildfire funding for California. Does that concern you at all?
Well, I've actually advocated and helped deliver record wildfire funding, wildfire prevention funding, that is, for forest management in California. And regardless of who the president is, I'll always fight for making sure we get the resources that we need. I think that his comments were about saying that we could do this a lot better, that California has had poor risk management practices that have been completely counterproductive in a lot of cases. We have not properly managed our forests. And so
it sounded more like a threat than the way you're phrasing it, but okay.
What I'm going to advocate for is to have both things. We need to have funding because this is such a huge issue. I've had communities in my district that have been completely destroyed by catastrophic wildfires. And the rebuilding process, by the way, needs to be made better, needs to be improved as well. But we need to have both. We need to have the resources to do forest management, but then we also need to have the right policies that allow us to actually follow the proper science of what's going to mitigate the risk of wildfires.
Congressman Kevin Kiley, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Coming up on Tuesday's Countdown 2024, the folks at the Lincoln Project have spent the last decade waging a losing fight to Donald Trump, this in the hopes of keeping him out of power. On tomorrow's show, we talk with Lincoln Project co-founder Rick Wilson about preparing to once again be the center of Trump resistance. If you missed the show, catch up on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. All you have to do is search Countdown 2024 and follow the show.